Hi, everyone. Welcome to Shift, a podcast about mobility. I'm Pete Bigelow, your host and reporter at the Automotive News.
And hello, I'm Leslie Allen. I edit Shift, the magazine, and mobility coverage at Automotive News.
Leslie, busy episode for us today and a busy week overall. We have coming up in a few minutes, we'll be talking with Tammy Snow from Continental about a lot of the different innovations that Conti showed at CES. They're kind of filling a lot of different technology buckets, and I think it's really interesting. But first, a busy week as far as automated driving news goes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we had a major announcement from Waymo having to do with UPS. Now, you covered that story, so can you give us sort of a quick overview of what happened?
So late last week, Waymo and UPS said that they're going to be working together for now to use Waymo minivans to distribute packages between an operational hub for UPS in Tempe and a multiple number of stores in the greater Phoenix area. I think the important part about their announcement really is that this is what they're doing now. And it sounds like there's a very promising future for them to work more closely together. So you can imagine that with logistics becoming bigger and kind of taking a more aggressive approach to developing self-driving delivery robots and vans, et cetera, you're marrying here one of the front runners in the autonomous driving race with one of the, you know, worldwide logistical giants.
Yes, Pete, more and more you're hearing about autonomous vehicles being put into commercial fleets. And I think that's really going to be an exciting use case that we're going to see developing among not just Waymo, but other companies.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's what Ford has talked about doing once it launches service in Miami. And they've really already been looking at some of the operational aspects of that and, you know, deciding where they want to deliver, what use cases work and don't work. Like they learned last year that, you know, people don't really want to come down out of their skyscraper to meet a autonomous vehicle at the curb. They want their food delivery brought up to their door. I think we see the same thing with GM and its new Cruise Origin vehicle, where they said that this can be a delivery vehicle as well as something that carries passengers.
Yeah, GM made that announcement at an event in San Francisco.
And what we're going to show you today is not an improvement on the car. It's completely different, and it's what you'd build if there were no cars. It's not a product you buy. It's an experience you share. Meet the Cruise Origin.
That, of course, was former General Motors President Dan Ammann, who is now the CEO of Cruise, where he is working with Kyle Vogt, who is the young man who started Cruise. And they're really doing some exciting things with this company. In addition to having the sedans, I guess, that were going around, now they are going to be working on these completely driverless vehicles that are going to be more like shuttles. And they're going to have no steering wheel, no pedals, etc. This is going to be a completely self-driving vehicle.
Man, no traditional operator either to manipulate controls. And I thought the Origin's an interesting vehicle. To me, it was kind of a Navya shuttle meets the Zooks vehicle that we've seen before. It looks nice. I think there's a lot of questions that kind of remain about, you know, how often does it need to be charged? What exactly is the, you know, design domain that it'll be operating in? How many is, you know, Cruise going to put on the streets? We assume they're going to start in San Francisco first. Well, then what? We did see that they're going to make them in Hamtramck, though. That was another nugget of news to kind of come out this week.
That's right. General Motors is investing $2.2 billion in what it calls the Detroit Hamtramck plant. And interestingly enough, this was a plant that pretty much was on the list to close. And it's kind of gotten a lifeline. I mean, not only is it going to be making the Cruise vehicle, it's also going to be making an electric truck for General Motors, an electric pickup truck. So that'd be interesting to see what happens there.
So big investment there. And one of the things that strikes me is that this was the plant that used to make the Chevy Volt with a V up until maybe about this time last year and when it was discontinued. So you see GM investing kind of, as we talk about this future of autonomous and electric, GM on Future Tech 2.0 at the Hamtramck plant.
And speaking of investments and GM and electrification, you might remember when we had Denise Gray on the show from LG Chem. And GM has a joint venture with LG Chem where they're going to be investing $2.3 billion to make battery cells in Lordstown, Ohio. So General Motors is really going all in on this whole electrification thing.
That's what, $4.5 billion right there in those two announcements.
Indeed.
Payoff, obviously, for them fairly down the road. But we have some more near-term products to talk about. We talked with Tammy Snow from Continental about a lot of the innovations they showed at CES, which included cybersecurity operations center, included new sensors for autonomous vehicles. What else?
Well, there were some human-machine interface innovations that they're talking about. And a couple of technologies that basically you can see right through. And that's just a little tease to some of the technologies that Tammy's going to detail.
Excellent. Well, maybe without further ado, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with Tammy Snow from Continental.
Hi again. I'm Jason Stein, publisher of Automotive News. I'd like to personally invite you to attend the all-new Automotive News World Congress. What's new? Well, let's start with the date and the venue. This year, the World Congress will take place March 24th and 25th in the former Cobo Hall, now the TCF Center, in the heart of downtown Detroit. What's more, the Congress is the centerpiece of our new Innovation Week, featuring a Shift Mobility event, plus the Automotive News PACE Awards, which honors innovation among automotive suppliers. And don't forget that one thing remains the same. The World Congress is your opportunity to hear directly from the most influential industry leaders and disruptors of the day. Attend the Congress and hear from Hyundai's Jose Munoz, Ford's Joe Hinrichs, Carvana CEO Ernie Garcia, Rivian founder RJ Scaringe, and many more. There will be fireside chats about automotive's big issues and all-star networking opportunities with prominent executives from across the industry. So be there when we set the agenda for 2020. Register today for the Automotive News World Congress, and I'll see you in Detroit.
Joining us now on the podcast is Tammy Snow, the head of research and advanced engineering in North America for Continental. Welcome, Tammy.
Thank you.
Great to have you here in Detroit. I know we just saw each other a few weeks ago in Las Vegas for CES. Really was kind of intrigued by a lot of the things that Continental was showing. It seemed like a lot of the underlying technology, be it for automated driving, driver assist, connectivity, Continental had a wide variety of features and technologies that you were showing. So how did the show go for you, and what was kind of the overall aim?
Yeah, so for us, the show went great. We had all of our relevant customers there, and investors, shareholders, government, industry, and those are the folks that we need to talk to, towards achieving Vision Zero and, the goals for Conti. The scope of mobility is certainly, expanding. And for us, it's important to understand what are the core competencies that are important as we expand that scope. And for us, the starting point is connectivity, data, and computing. So we showed a wide range of technologies that fall into that area. And then as well, for assisted and automated driving, sensor technologies and computing platforms for that. And then really going into the user experience and what you can do if you have that as the basis.
Tammy, you made a brief mention of Vision Zero. Can you walk us through Continental's Vision Zero?
Yeah, so the goal is really to achieve zero injuries, zero accidents, zero fatalities. And for us, automated driving and connectivity play a key role in getting there. And not only in the vehicle platforms, but also in the infrastructure.
I want to ask you one of the broad themes I thought at CES that wasn't just particular to Vegas, but really sets the stage for everything we're talking about in 2020 this year was like a lot of the cockpit innovations, and I saw a lot of different companies had their own takes on what the cockpit of today, near term and long term, looked like. And what you guys showed was certainly like right up there as if not the most interesting, certainly one of them, and that the 3D display. What sort of work has gone into that, and what are you You know, what do you, you mentioned user experience, so how does that enhance the user experience?
Yeah, so for us, the 3D display is important for a couple of reasons. One, we're using this also to give information for assisting the driver. But then once we get into autonomous modes, there's also providing a positive user experience for the driver. And part of that is, in the past, you had to have cameras that were focusing on your head position, and you also could only see it from certain views, and there was no haptic feedback. So for us, really adding the haptic feedback, making it viewable by all passengers, and then also having this 4K resolution.
Yeah, I thought that was really, you know, I wish there's a way for our listeners to like experience that, because it was really interesting. I'm curious, is there any like DOT standards or regulations that you have to kind of keep in mind as you design something like that?
Well, at this point, the focus for us is really more about, improving consumer trust. So part of autonomous driving, you can make the best autonomous driving vehicle in the world, but if nobody's willing to get in it, it's a problem. And so HMI becomes a big focus, and the display technologies are one component of that. And so we understand that we really have to work on improving that and add that element.
Tammy, it's interesting that you brought up the whole issue of consumer trust. Now, there was a study that just came out this week, and they're saying that people are willing to pay a premium for level 4 versus level 2 technology in their cars, but no more than about 24%. So people are willing to trust it up to a certain point. They just don't want to pay for it at this point. So what other ways can automakers and suppliers build that trust and that faith in the technology?
Yeah, so I think there's two aspects. One is awareness of the technology itself. And you'll find that if you talk to different automakers, they all use different terminology for things like lane keep assist or emergency braking or cruise control, but they all have their own acronyms and variations. This makes it very confusing for the consumer market. Continental has launched a Safely There campaign, which is designed to really educate consumers about what the technology can do and what it can't do. Yeah, and so this is really starting with just your assisted, which is giving warnings, all the way to the automated, which is doing interaction on the steering and braking and engine systems, you know, all the way up to autonomous, and letting people know what that's about. So that's the first point. The second point is really, as I mentioned, the HMI, but not just inside the vehicle, but also outside the vehicle. Because when we do have fully autonomous cars, even in geofenced areas of the city, for example, it's going to need to interact with people inside and outside. And if there's no driver, we're normally used to understanding, are you going to stop for me? Do you see me? Can I go? Those are the things that you would just look at the driver, and they would use hand gestures or facial expressions to indicate, you know, a communication between the two of you. If there is no driver, the vehicle needs to learn how to communicate with humans and other drivers to indicate what the exchange is. And so we've been testing out some concepts using sound, using displays, using lighting technologies. And this is one of the things that we showed at CES. And we showed it in a public area so that we could get feedback from all people from all walks of life. And so this was really good feedback for us. And then we also show inside the vehicle. If you think about when you're on an airplane and there's going to be some turbulence, you have no idea what's happening around you because you're not piloting the plane. But they give you information. Hey, you're going to feel turbulence. It's going to last for about 10 minutes. You know, buckle up your seatbelt, stay seated. It's the same thing inside the vehicle. People need to have a certain level of knowledge about their surroundings when the vehicle's driving. So this is, you know, one of the other things that we think is important.
Such an interesting topic of how does the vehicle relate to pedestrians or bicyclists. The now defunct company Drive AI, they had this really kind of, I don't want to call it bizarre, but maybe that's the best word for it. But they had 70 different like messages that the vehicle could display on like 5 different screens toward a pedestrian. And it was interesting because it really, I thought, kind of captured the complexity of all the different things that need to be communicated. But maybe in a way that, you know, you need 3 things that are really simple and universal. What sort of feedback did you get at CES? Like, what are the things you heard that maybe surprised you?
Well, I think that there's definitely some things that will need to be standardized, let's say at least within a country, so that people that are traveling in that country, but perhaps even internationally. And that's what we're, working to figure out. We're working with universities. We're in consortiums to understand what others are doing from the OEMs to other suppliers and really exchange information on, what kind of feedback we're getting. The other thing is we do run our own cubes on our campuses around the world, so we're able to get employee feedback about, what they're looking for in terms of communication with the vehicle when they're in their vehicle or when they're walking around campus or when they're inside getting a shuttle service to the front lobby from some, faraway parking lot.
So you mentioned Cube. Back up a second. What is Cube and what are you, kind of testing in that HMI?
Yep.
Are there specific things that you've implemented or what have you learned so far?
Yeah. So for us, that's the Continental Urban Mobility Vehicle. So we have a partnership with Easy Mile. They're the ones who are developing the vehicle. We take that from them just like we would from any automotive manufacturer using their car as a platform. We use this as a development platform. And then in certain areas, we're focused on, let's say, autonomous driving. So we'll be putting all of our own sensors and algorithms and computing platforms in there to see how it's working. In other sites, we're looking at studying things like the HMI or the access to the vehicle and using our technologies from Zonar, one of our brands in Continental. Or we're looking at things like if this is on a student campus, students have a tendency to leave everything behind. I have two sons that lose their phone about once a month. And so for that, we have algorithms that use artificial intelligence to look for items left behind and determine if they're of value or not. Just examples of the different sites we focus on different things for these kind of technologies.
Now with Cube, you're also incorporating miniature robots, aren't you? These delivery type robots. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, so that was something that we showed last year at CES, and that's really about last mile delivery. We see that most of us are ordering everything on Amazon these days and doing much less going to the brick and mortar stores. And so it becomes really important that when we get into really the dense urban environments and we're seeing, for future world trends that urbanization is definitely going to be upon us, we have to think about how are these vehicles going to navigate and then how are we going to navigate to individual locations where goods need to be delivered or received. And so this is where we're looking at lots of different types of solutions from drones to robots to, other methods of transportation.
Just thinking about that from like a 30,000 foot view, you're not just looking at the vehicle themselves, but Continental's been involved in intelligent intersections lately. And I think that's part of that efficient movement of goods and people in cities. What's the work you're doing in that respect?
Yeah, so for us, it's really important to also work on the infrastructure. So we've built up several cities with the intelligent infrastructure, so cameras, radars, LIDARs, connectivity solutions, data platform solutions. And there, the goal is really to supplement what we're doing in cars so that we can really get to this Vision Zero faster. The intersections can actually act on behalf of unconnected cars and unconnected people, right? Because it can see everything and then it can communicate that information to the cars that are connected and automated. And so for us, we've recently just launched in Auburn Hills, Michigan, our latest smart city, smart intersection. And it even goes beyond the intersection because one of the other projects we're working on is Wrong Way Driver. And this started really as a passion project from one of our engineers. He got the bad news that a family of five who was close friends of his were killed by a wrong way driver. And he said, this is ridiculous. I mean, we have the technology to prevent something like this. So he started looking in the market to see what was available. And there were solutions, but they were pretty cost prohibitive for cities and also difficult for maintenance, and ongoing service. So he decided we should come up with something better that really could have a widespread impact. So they designed a solution and then showed this to the different agencies, NHTSA, IHS, AAA, the police, and really got some good feedback, and then installed this in the city of Auburn Hills. So this is running now. We're collecting data, and then we'll see, based on the data that we collect from the intersection and from the entrance and exit areas of the city, what are the next steps for us.
You know, I will tell you that whatever day it was that you guys announced you were working on a wrong way driver, I thought to myself, I haven't really seen, you know, I have not seen this personally, you know, if ever, you know, in years. And sure enough, I go literally drove out from reading your announcement and saw a pickup truck entering the highway on the exit ramp. It literally happened right in front of me. And I was like, boy, if this is not, you know, coincidence, this is really, it was really something else, and eye-opening that I just read your announcement and literally went outside and saw it happen.
Yeah. And unfortunately, we're seeing more and more. We had the same experience driving back from our test track after we had just shown it. And I was behind the engineer who had designed this. He was a car length in front of me, and a wrong-way driver came down the road on I-75. So that's when he contacted the Michigan State Police and said, hey, could you come back up to our test track? I think there's something you need to see. But, you know, there was another announcement yesterday that happened on Rochester Road in Troy. So it's, you know, we're seeing more and more of this, and I don't know the true source, if it's, you know, distracted driving or impaired driving. I know there's we have some statistics on, you know, generally what's the cause of that, and we'll try to focus on that.
I think it's really interesting that an engineer's personal experience actually went into the development of this technology. How often does that happen at Continental, where you can take your own personal experience or your own views and suddenly, and this becomes a technology that you can actually commercialize at some point?
Actually, pretty often. Yeah, a lot of the projects start as passion projects because people look around them, you know, their community, and they see things happening, and the engineers are wired to be problem solvers in their DNA. And so they see a problem to solve. And then it's up to us to, you know, work with the industries to understand the crash statistics and see how widespread is this. Is this something that we should make our first priority focus, or let's say a later priority focus? And then once we have that information, we launch forward. And so we've done that on a few. I don't know, virtual A-pillar was something that we had showed previously, where there was a lot of accidents and even fatalities from people making a left-hand turn, especially in a vehicle like an SUV or a pickup truck that has a wide A-pillar, usually, you know, to have an airbag in there. But it's also really creating a frontal blind spot that is causing safety critical issues.
Bring this back to you know, the cockpit innovations. I'm wondering if I'm a wrong way driver, theoretically, will you detect it and be able to give me an alert in my car that lets me know that I screwed up and I need to, you know, kind of take some sort of emergency action?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we have it set up so that you can get a notification on your app on your phone, but we've been talking with the automakers to talk to them about what are the solutions we can do to bring this information really into your displays and really into the cockpit, because that would be our first priority. And they're very engaged with us and very interested.
Speaking of cockpit innovations, I know that there's a lot that goes into the display. And we've talked about this before, but I would love to hear, you know, you've kind of told us that there's the way that the eyeballs of moths work is something that engineers have studied and kind of used to create new technology that is helping you create new displays.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely something that we're looking into, is biomimetics and understanding, you know, a lot of the, let's say, designs from nature can be very inspiring and very educational to us about how we design our future technologies. And I think that paying attention to that is important for us to really make the best advances forward. So that's certainly one example of where we would look at using that kind of information. And yeah, we see more and more cases where it becomes important. And I think, you know, with the cockpit designs, it's about what you're displaying, but it's also an interaction between the human and the vehicle. So we also need to be observant of the human. And that's where, you know, a lot of the in-cabin monitoring systems come in and making sure that we understand, you know, what the person is paying attention to and what they're not. We really want to find that perfect sweet spot where we're giving the right information at the right time, but not too much information or at the wrong time, right? And so, especially for different levels of autonomous driving, we need to understand what's relevant at that moment in time and what do they need. And each technology that we have will play a different role depending on the scenario at hand at that moment in time.
I think it's interesting when you're talking about driver monitoring. And right now, with level two technology, you have some drivers who simply turn off the capabilities of this technology. So just going to what we have in the market now, how do you keep consumers more engaged with the technologies that they already have at their hand?
Yeah, so I think you're exactly right about that. We don't want them to turn this technology off. So, A, I mentioned we had the Safely There campaign, which is really about raising the awareness so that they understand what it can and cannot do. And then it's about paying attention to the driver state. And for us, that means the driver attention, the driver sleepiness, the driver emotion, and then stress. And stress, in this case, we're talking about physiological stress. So from, you know, respiratory rates to heart rates to, you know, things like that that would indicate there could be a potential problem.
How would you go about kind of awakening a driver if they've fallen asleep? Or are there like haptic ways you do that, or you turn on the air vents, or, you know,
How
do you really counter that?
Yeah, so there's a lot of different, just like we have, you know, multiple senses, the car can also have multiple ways of engaging. So anything from lighting solutions to sound solutions to display technologies to haptic vibrations, and those are the whole suite of a holistic HMI that you would need in order to have this, you know, communication back and forth.
This brings up the whole topic of the need to get toward higher levels of autonomy faster. Now, I know that in 2018, you made a speech at the car management briefing seminars in Traverse City, where you said that agile product development is crucial to ensuring the company stay competitive. So can you walk us through a little bit more of your thoughts about how fast companies need to move to get toward, let's say, level four autonomy?
Yeah, exactly. So for Continental, we believe that building blocks are the key. Yeah. So you really start with having these, you know, assisted, where you're just getting the warnings, to the automated, where you're actually doing the braking or steering intervention, you know, and then those kind of things can happen everywhere. Yeah, there's no restriction. Those can happen everywhere, but in those specific use cases. You know, and at the other end of the spectrum, you can have fully autonomous, where the car is actually doing all of the operation, but not everywhere. Yeah, so it's in a geofenced area, and these are restricted areas. And then you have everything in between, right? And that's where things like L3 come in, because it's kind of the hybrid between the two. So you're having this assisted and automated in certain scenarios, and then you can switch over to fully autonomous in other scenarios, depending on the driving environment. We believe really in the building blocks to build, you know, on everything previous and build up to the next.
I want to ask you about this level three area. We've seen so many people right now, they're talking about level two plus, level two plus, 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 or they're Waymo working on level four. When are we going to see somebody actually activate and deploy something that's level three, where the system is taking responsibility and then later on handing it back to the human driver?
Yeah, I think the whole industry is asking that question. And I think there's a lot of factors that go in. I mean, of course, regulation. And then you're talking about autonomy for different things, right? So you have the privately owned vehicles. You have the commercial vehicle fleets, right, that are delivering goods in the big rigs. And then, you know, you have these self-driving or driverless, let's say, shuttles, which have no steering wheel, no cockpit, and they're completely driverless. And I think that we're going to see different strategies for each of those, you know, areas. And for us, like I said, regulation is going to play one role, and then consumer trust will play another role. And for Continental, it's just important that we are able to support any of those, and ultimately, whatever the vehicle manufacturers decide to move forward in each of those realms, you know, we have the technology to support that.
So we've been talking about trust, and what I've had in my mind is, you know, convincing these reluctant consumers to trust the system. But maybe along these lines, like, do we see people over-trusting level two systems right now? And is that, you know, as big a danger, if not a bigger danger, than under trust?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. So, you know, people sometimes are thinking that the system is going to do more than it is, and we need to ensure that they understand there are limitations to the systems, right? And sometimes those can be limitations at certain speeds only, or, you know, limitations only up to a certain level of braking, and they have to understand that. But you're really going to get a feel for it if you use it. Right. So once you start using it, it's like anything else. Then you really begin to understand how it works and really, you know, understand what the life-saving opportunities are for this. And I think, you know, folks like yourself who raise awareness about what's available and what's coming out there and, you know, what are some of the statistics on really how can it help? I think that helps. But the funny thing is that, you know, we do a lot of testing, especially for level three. It's much more complicated because you really have to handle the takeover situation. So we've done testing where we have this Wizard of Oz vehicle where the person who's driving thinks that the car is autonomous, but it's actually not. There's actually somebody else driving the car, but they have the feeling that it is. This allows us to take it on public roads in a real-world scenario and see what the user's reactions are. And then, of course, we have simulators, right, where we can, you know, give certain scenarios that wouldn't be safe on real roads and see how people react. And we create different HMI configurations to see which combination works best for which use cases. And when you ask the people, do you feel that that helped you react faster? They'll say, yeah, maybe a little bit, 20% or something. But when we look at the actual data, it can be up to 100% improvement in reaction time. So, of course, the vehicle is always better than the human, and it varies by different amounts depending on what the use case is. So people really do need to trust the vehicle.
So this is I want to hear more about this Wizard of Oz vehicle, and maybe I don't know if this scenario plays into it, but I want to ask you a hypothetical. If you have a level three car that is driving down the highway, and now it's time for, let's say it's an exit-to-exit sort of automated system, you're approaching the exit, and it's time for the automated vehicle to hand back control to the human driver, what's the best course of action if that human, for whatever reason, can't be reawakened, does not retake control?
Yeah, so we always have fail-safe mechanisms that the vehicle can pull over to the side if need be. But, you know, we study all different scenarios for all different driver states and different exit scenarios, and that helps us really understand how to dynamically adjust based on all the information that we have. And you know, this is part of the challenge, but, you know, also part of the solution.
That's interesting because so you said that the vehicle will pull over to the side of the road. I know there's systems on the road today that would stop in the lane of travel. And I think that's like it's an engineering challenge. How many sensors do you want to put on the car to get to that side of the road? But, you know, that's where the devil's in the details of how these systems actually work right now.
Right. And I think, you know, the vehicles are getting more and more complex to handle all of these different sensors and all of these different systems. We're having much more software, you know, these days and moving forward, and much more computing, much more data exchange. You know, we've got edge computing and connectivity with the cloud. And this means that we need more solutions for that. And so now, you know, we're working on these cooperation portals where we're able to really deliver the software, test and validate the software, and integrate the software automatically. And then, you know, should we detect some kind of errors, then we can also restore data for all software suppliers in the vehicle. We're setting up high-performance computers that are basically server-based networks. And these are some of the things that we showed at CES this year that become really important as we move forward in autonomous driving.
You're talking talking about moving forward in autonomous driving, would you say if there are obstacles, and there are obstacles there, are they mostly software related? Are they hardware related, vision related? Can you tell us what some of the biggest challenges right now that you face in each of these areas?
Yeah. So as I mentioned, you know, as the software is growing exponentially, and it's not just for, you know, autonomy, it's for entertainment, it's for a lot of different things, video streaming, you know, there's a huge bandwidth that we're seeing now that we've never seen before. And so you have to adapt your systems to adjust to that. As you mentioned, you know, there's more and more sensors going on the car because we want to ensure redundancy. Much like we have, you know, eyes, ears, noses, touch, the vehicles also need this because any given sensor is definitely going to have pros and cons to it. There's going to be certain scenarios where it doesn't function as well and needs to rely on other sensors that are more capable under those conditions. And so you do have this hybrid of sensors that have to work seamlessly together. And they have to create this environment model of the environment around them, both inside and outside the car. And then that really drives, you know, the function of the vehicle.
Speaking of sensors, Conti showed at CES a new sensor that among the things it did was it could really be like read road conditions at road level, which I thought was really interesting because, you know, in a driver assist or automated vehicle context, you know, I don't necessarily care about the weather overall. I care about the road conditions more so than weather conditions. What is that sensor? You know, it seemed very versatile. There's other uses too.
Yeah. So basically it's, you know, Continental has been doing passive safety systems for a long time. So we've had these crash impact sensing systems, these sensors that are around the vehicle and used for things like airbag deployment or restraint, you know, during passive safety systems for crashes. Those are generally for high speed, high impact, but we've come up with a new variant, which is used for low speed, low impact. And this is important because it fulfills some functional safety requirements that we need to fulfill. And it's really detecting structure-borne sound and also airborne sound. And with airborne, it's using a kind of Doppler effect to detect and classify what that sound is and what direction that it's coming from. And using that information, of course, we can detect damage to a vehicle, for example, which is nice for private vehicle owners, but really critical for, let's say, a driverless vehicle that has no driver on board to detect for the fleet owners what's happening to that vehicle. But as you mentioned, it can also detect road condition information. And this becomes critical for a lot of our algorithms that are, you know, doing motion control for the vehicle. It can detect emergency vehicles, which is going to be important for type approval for autonomous driving. So there's a lot of different things that we can do with this type of sensor. And again, it's building off the sensors that we've been doing for years already.
I'm waiting for the sensor that can detect potholes. I mean, I ran into a monster pothole this morning.
So actually, we have something for you. And it's actually using our surround view sensors. So we have surround view cameras in the vehicle that can look around the vehicle. But also, we have a special algorithm that can provide an augmented reality so that you can see through the hood of your vehicle to see what's underneath. What are the road conditions? So if there's a pothole, if there's a curb, if your kids left their bike, you know, these are the kind of things that you would be able to see and navigate around with this transparent hood.
Again, back to all the different things that Conti showed at CES, you know, you mentioned all the data and software that's going into cars, and you guys have come out with a news like security operating center that's part of what Argus has been working on since Continental acquired them a few years ago at this point. What does the security operating center do? How is it kind of looped into real-time operations of vehicles?
Yeah. So for us, we, as you mentioned, we had already been working on this, and we recently just joined forces with T-Systems. And so we're working together with them so that we can really understand the health of the vehicle from a cybersecurity perspective, and that we can understand real time what's happening with the vehicle and notify fleet owners if there is an attack, and that we can take action immediately and mitigate the risk for the users and for the fleet owners.
So is it for a fleet owner or an automaker or both?
Or both. Yep. Okay. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And this, of course, becomes very important, and it's a foundational aspect of everything that we do.
So, Tammy, what are some of the other security measures that are being studied at Continental?
Yeah, so one of the things that we did show at CES this year was ultra-wideband. And for us, this becomes really important because of the precise localization that's possible with this technology. It's really going to be a game changer for access systems. So number one, with the smartphone access, but also with the localization, it can prevent relay attacks, these so-called man-in-the-middle attacks. We showed a demo where if you're holding, let's say, your key fob on the outside of your windshield, it will not start the car. If you're holding it at the exact same spot but on the inside of your windshield, it will start the car. So it's really precise, and we're working with this connected car consortium with partners like, BMW and Apple, and we're really trying to form a standardization for these access and digital key technologies so that we can really make it applicable and standardized across all mobile phone operators.
And lastly, Tammy, I want to know the Tammy Snow story. So how did you get to where you are now? How did you get into engineering? And what drives you on a day-to-day basis?
Okay, so I've been with Continental for 25 years. So my dad was an aeronautical engineer who used to guide missiles for the government. And when they moved out of state, he went back to University of Michigan and got another degree in systems engineering to work in automotive. So I guess that's the starting point for, where I got interested in it. And, I went to Oakland University and took a first class in I took classes in computer engineering, and we had one class where we had to actually design a circuit board first and then write the software to control it. And after that class, I said, I actually kind of like the electronic side more. So I ended up doing both. And then, I started at Conti actually as a software engineer, so good thing I kept that, and ended up working through the vehicle dynamics group, doing braking systems, and then switching over to the passive safety systems, and then to ADAS. And then I took a leap of faith and left engineering and did business development for a few years, and had the opportunity to move to Germany and live in our most beautiful location, Lindau, for a while, which was great. And then came back, and we had made some acquisitions during that time. And I did a startup for one of our surround view segments, and then had the opportunity to come back to engineering as head of innovation. And so for me, this has been really a fantastic journey, and new opportunities to learn at every turn, and meet all these inspiring people that come up with these passion projects and really do want to make their communities a better place. And I really enjoy being involved in that.
This is a really 80,000 foot question, but when you think of innovation, how do you go about it?
Well, I think, for us, it starts as an idea, and then, we think about what could be the widespread impact of something like that. And, we go through the process of, much like you would see on Shark Tank, where we come and present the ideas, but to a steering committee that's looking from a global perspective for each of the individual regions, and then, of course, from a business perspective as well. And then we have people who are looking at it from the perspective of, safety and our Vision Zero. And when we bring all that together, I think that's how we really are successful in moving forward, to do innovations that are not only important to us as a company, but are also important to society at large.
And Tammy, it looks like we've run out of time, and we really have enjoyed talking with you. So thank you so much for joining us, and we hope that we can talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
Leslie, what did you make of that?
Well, I think it's kind of interesting that many of the innovations that we're seeing, many of the most exciting innovations are coming in the supplier space, not just from the automakers. And Continental, of course, is in the forefront of a lot of these automotive innovations. And I think we're going to see even more coming because we're starting to see even more consolidation in the industry. I mean, as we speak, there's this huge merger that's in the works between BorgWarner and Delphi. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out of that.
That's right. That was one other big piece of news that we had this week to bring us full circle here from the big news we talked about at the beginning. It's truly not, we're not off to a slow start here in 2020, that's for sure.
That's right. And so with that, we thank you so much for joining us, and we hope to see you on our next podcast.